interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Friday to you. And it is a Friday, February 8th edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love, Clint Domingue bringing you home on 1037 The Game. And of course, this is my third straight TGIF Friday to be out here live at the Cougar Dome on the campus of St. Thomas More High School. Excited to be here. Huge ball game coming up later tonight. We'll tell you all about it. And Clint joining me from the 237 Roof Studios, the full three-hour Monty set to unfold. We've got a guest in every hour. We've got some leftover recruiting topics, things that probably should have been cleaned up yesterday that I'm going to kick to you today. And we're going to start to look ahead. LSU Auburn. It's not quite a matchup of top 25 teams, but it's awfully close. Bruce Pearl's team has won three in a row. If they win in Baton Rouge, they will be ranked next week. So this one has implications, at least at this point in the SEC season. We'll pay a little time, a little tribute to Georgia State at UL. Speaking of games that teams need to win, Bob Marlin, the Raging Cajuns, they need to start playing some defense, and they need to scratch one across in the win column. We'll talk about that and plenty more, including visits from three different guests. In this hour, about 10 minutes from now, Jason Caldwell, inside the AuburnTigers.com. Every time we need an Auburn preview, it really doesn't even matter the sport, we go to Jason Caldwell. So we're going to take a trip out to the Plains at 4:15 to get a preview of Bruce Pearl's Plainsman / War Eagle / Tigers. Again, they're playing some good basketball, and they've got a young man healthy that could certainly present problems for these leave-it-late LSU Tigers. So a full preview of Auburn basketball coming up in our next segment. Our only guest in hour number one. I'll give you the drop and a little heads up on our sink or swim question of the day. It will be recruiting related. I want to know the superlatives in your mind from LSU and UL's class. So get to thinking now. Call at 4:30. At straight up 5 o'clock, we're going to debut for the second day in a row a weekly segment dedicated to LSU baseball. Straight up 5 o'clock will be your on-deck circle with James Moran. And this is year two for the smartest Moran in the village. Coming aboard, he does a great job as the editor of Tiger Rag magazine, and he'll start to give some of his takes on LSU baseball. And we'll stray to some different subjects than what we had yesterday with Hunt Palmer, where we were starting pitcher number two heavy, where we talked a good bit about Daniel Cabrera and his role. I've got some different topics in mind on Paul Mainieri's men for James Moran at 5 o'clock, and he will be our only guest of hour number two. Leading off hour three, and it's appropriate, I think, that I'm here at St. Thomas More, Eric Mouton. These days, he wears a lot of hats. My man is busy. He is the head basketball coach of the one and only Ascension Episcopal Blue Gator Boy basketball team. He's the athletic director, and he is the Raging Cajun color analyst for ESPN Plus, calling these UL Hoops games. So excited for a visit with Eric Mouton, a guy who played here at the Cougar Dome, who coached here and was a part of some pretty special teams for the duration, really, of this St. Thomas More basketball program. So loaded up with great guests today, Jason Caldwell, James Moran, and Eric Mouton. Whenever you're ready, give us a jingle. 706-0111. Not a particularly busy night and Friday leading into today's program. Not a lot of really big news. And the beautiful part of the NBA trade deadline, ending 2 hours before yesterday's show, is we got to spend all the time I think we needed there. Not a lot to add on that subject. But there is a general basketball theme that I had in mind, and one that I wanted to start the program with today. LSU basketball continues to play at a pretty breakneck speed and pace. And it's something that Will Wade has almost had to adapt to offensively. He's got the firepower to do it. But then defensively, his team goes through valleys and lulls unlike any I can remember in LSU basketball since maybe the first few years of Johnny Jones. So I know it hasn't exactly been decades, but they aren't D-ing up this year the way they did last year. But I'll take the trade-off for the talent level. Point being, I mentioned yesterday we're starting to see some ABA style of basketball. LSU plays it, we know that. The Raging Cajuns, I got out to see them on Tuesday night, gave up 103 to Georgia Southern. And that was after a road trip that saw them lose twice by a combined 46 points last week going over to the East Coast. And in one of those ball games, got absolutely blown out by the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, one of the worst losses in at least the latter portion of the Bob Marlin era. And one of the things that Marlin always discusses, and I hear it more and more, not necessarily here with Danny Broussard in St. Thomas More, but when I travel to a lot of high school gyms, when I cover and take in college games, the pro game, it goes without saying. Mike D'Antoni and those Phoenix Suns, 7 seconds or left with Steve Nash, kind of popularized it. We see it now with the Rockets, the Warriors, so many teams. It's the idea of fun and gun on the hardwood. We're going to score this many points. Can you keep up? And what's been sacrificed in so many ways is defense. And you almost have to come to a gym like this, to the high school level, to experience defense first, where it matters, where it generates the offense, and where you can see games that are played in tight quarters. Now, don't get me wrong. LSU has played plenty of them in tight quarters, but it's a much different feel. And so what strikes me today, it's our second Friday show of February, we have fully morphed from football mode, with the exception of some recruiting hangover. But this time last week, we were previewing the Super Bowl. We're starting to maybe dip a toe into the waters of baseball, sure. A lot of LSU chatter this week. We'll have UL talk a little more in depth on Robichaux's guys on Monday. But people, we are firmly entrenched in basketball season. And for whatever reason, it is just smacking me in the face that everybody wants to go, go, go. And it does come with consequences. And right now, in particular with Malik Marchetti out on the UL side, I think you're seeing the Raging Cajuns suffer mightily. Marlin always talks about his teams wanting to play up tempo. They're the tops at pace and scoring in the Sun Belt. He prides himself on that, and there's nothing wrong with it. But when you lose Jonathan Stove, when you lose players like they had in the front court, it's just not going to be that easy to rebound. And then especially with Marchetti out, suddenly the Cajuns are a young team that, yeah, they want to go, 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 but defensively, boy, they leave so many wide-open shots. And that's got to be a focus point at some juncture for the Cajuns if they're going to turn it around. As far as LSU goes, I'd like to see them lock down a little more on that side as well. They've got a guy that up front, as the head of the snake, is devastating at taking the basketball away. No question about it with Tremont Waters. One of the best fly swatters and erasers on the back line in Cavell Bigby Williams. But I think the rest of that core leaves plenty to be desired. Defensively, Naz Reed, I could take it or leave it sometimes. Some of the other regular players, do you always get it from Darius Days? I'm not sure. I think that's why he probably started to play a little less here in the last week or so. Emmitt Williams, high energy. I think more often it's on the boards. Can they continue to get after it on defense? So here we are, smack dab in the middle of basketball season. This time next month, we're going to have conference tournaments. People are going to be claiming automatic bids to the big dance. Heck, this time next month, I'm likely to be in Lake Charles. We're going to have Marsh Madness as well. And then on the NBA side, well, it's been go, go, go for at least the last 8 to 10 years since so many of the rules changed. Can't hand check anybody. So many ways that they favor offense. And so we talk about football a lot, being basketball on grass. Well, what happens when even basketball gets accelerated and you take the defensive component out? The answer is, I think, what we're seeing far too often with the Cajuns and even with LSU, which continues to put itself in precarious spots. They're not going to want to do that tomorrow in what should be just about a sold-out Pete Maravich Assembly Center. Credit goes here, before we exit stage left with this segment, credit goes to Jacques Doucet, WAFB in Baton Rouge. He's reporting that there are less than 1,000 tickets left to be purchased for tomorrow's game, Auburn at LSU. It's going to be packed. LSU's playing well. I think defense is going to be the key. We'll get you a full preview of the Auburn Tigers on the other side of this break. You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports, and it's week three in a row that we're hanging out at the Cougar Dome on the campus of St. Thomas More High School. Coming right back on 103.7 The Game.
Without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Back for break, ready to talk some LSU basketball and get a preview of the Auburn Tigers. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game, and we'll take a trip out to the plains aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. It's our guy, Jason Caldwell, inside the AuburnTigers.com. How are you, Jason?
Good. I get a little Def Leppard bumper coming in. I like that one, man. That's pretty good.
It'll get you moving on a Friday. All right, let's start with this three-game winning streak for your Auburn Tigers. Mizzou, Bama, Florida, all of them home wins. What's changed? Is suddenly Bruce Pearl and the Tigers starting to play good basketball?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things you mentioned is one of the keys they played at home. This is a team that's really good at home. We lost a couple of games at home the last 2 years, so that obviously helps. But the other thing is defense. Defensive pressure causing turnovers, and in turn not letting teams get into the paint with easy buckets. That's been the biggest difference in this team the last three games, and it looks more like this team did last year in the way they defended on the perimeter. And obviously, you look and you start going, you know, facing this LSU team, you got to be able to pressure the ball and not give up penetration to Jermont Waters. So that's going to be the key once again on Saturday.
Auburn 16-6 overall, 5-4 in league play. And you did mention the turnovers. Glad you did. How about 38 combined forced against Bama and Florida the last two games alone? Another thing I thought was interesting, Jason, Pearl rolled out 10 different players that scored, not just that played, but scored against Florida. So give me a little bit of a purview into the depth and how much trust that he's building in that rotation.
Yeah, it's one of the things that last year, it's almost, kind of the opposite of last season, where they had about seven guys for a while, and when Anthony McLemore got hurt at the end of the year, they had about six. Now you get Austin Wiley and then Purifoy back. And Purifoy's starting to kind of round into shape a little bit. Of course, Austin Wiley back, dinged up the last few weeks. Played a few minutes the other night. Should be able to go tomorrow, maybe a few more minutes. But they've got a lot more options. That's no question about it. And so it allows the team really to play a couple of different ways and times. They can, and they're always going to be a team that wants to shoot the three and tempo and do all those things, but you get Austin Wiley inside and put Malik Dunbar on the floor at the three position. All of a sudden, this is a team that has a little bit of size at times, but they do have some options, that's for sure, and it's one of the things that I think as the season goes on, if they can stay healthy, it'll be a big benefit for them.
Continuing our chat now with Jason Caldwell, great follow on Twitter at ITATJason. If you don't mind, I want to go a little deeper on Austin Wiley and I guess the areas of the game he impacts most. And the reason I single him out, Jason, is because Will Wade did. And he couldn't help but notice they were 1-3 league play before he came back from injury. So you say that they're ramping him back up as far as the PT goes, but how has he impacted this team?
Yeah, I think he gives you the size. And, when you look at him, Austin's a guy that, he has the physically imposing. Avery McLemore is probably a better rim protector than Austin is in terms of just shot blocking. The difference is probably for Austin is post defense and maybe more importantly, defensive rebounding. He limits teams' second shots probably more than anybody else when they have him on the court. And so you get him out there, he's the guy that probably is the best true defensive rebounder Auburn has, him and Chumo Kiki. So he's the guy that just physically is a better matchup. And obviously, I mean, you look at LSU and a guy like Nas inside some of the other bodies. You need to have some physical presence when you're talking about LSU and, you know, Auburn. When they played Kentucky and Mississippi State without him, there was a big hole in the middle, and that was something that they didn't have that physical body inside.
So Auburn comes to town, and, you know, the other thing I can't help but think about, the level of coaching in this conference, and you've been covering the SEC longer than I have, but I would think this is about as good of a stable of head coaches as the league's had in quite some time.
It's one of the keys why you look at this league now, is you have to go back to, I mean, there were some runs where there are one or two teams here. They are Arkansas, Kentucky in the early 90s, and Kentucky a number of times at different times. But you look at, and you got to go back to the mid-80s when you're talking about the basketball talent and the coaching that went along with it, whether it was, you know, Auburn had a team to make the, you know, Elite Eight, Sweet 16 teams, Alabama, LSU with the Final Four in 86 with, you know, those guys, Dale Brown. It's very similar now. You start looking at the coaching names, and when you bring coaches in like that, you're going to improve basketball. We've seen better recruiting, better players, and, you know, Bruce Pearl mentioned Will Wade talking about, hey, not a lot of people know this young guy yet, but they're going to because he's a really good coach and they got a bunch of good players. And yeah, it's been the difference in this league is looking at the coaching additions in the last three or four seasons.
One more, Jason, on the hardwood. LSU is going to take on Tennessee later in the conference slate, and you guys will too. Actually, it's your last regular season game on March the 9th, so you haven't seen the Vols, but you have seen Kentucky, and it was a narrow 82-80 loss at Auburn Arena. How for real are the Wildcats this year?
Yeah, you know what? They're better than I thought they were going to be, and it's because of the defensive end. They get after you, and they limit your opportunities on defense. This is not a Kentucky team that will send five or six guys that you go, wow, those are amazing offensive players. But you look at Ashton Hagans out front, he can defend and do those things. And, you know, they've got, you know, five or six big guys inside that can protect the paint. So it's probably defense as much as anything that's been the difference for Kentucky.
Recruiting question in before we let you go. Auburn, according to the 247 composite team rankings, the number 11 class in the country for 2019. What's the reception been so far, I guess, by the fan base on the message boards in wake of everything that, I guess, almost happened this offseason with Gus Malzahn?
I think that's one of the things that, you know, because of the way this thing goes now with the early signing period, you know, Auburn had 16 signees, nine of them already on campus. And so it kind of gets a little dampened when you have that, you know, I call it now the second signing period, which is the traditional one. Not as much happens, but I think, you know, you're looking, because of the way the season went, for Auburn to hold together like that. And obviously, when you get, you know, Bo Nix, five-star quarterback, and, you know, that kind of hits up a class. I think overall, got to be pretty pleased if you're Auburn about that class. But a lot of focus has to go on offensive line for 2020, and that'll be kind of the issue for Auburn moving forward.
First time talking with our friend Jason Caldwell in 2019. We appreciate it and look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, man.
Jason Caldwell inside the Auburn Tigers. Carved out a minute or two on the backside of that interview, and there's one reason. Because if you want to get into college basketball, you haven't been able to do that, maybe you haven't wanted to with everything else that's going on, you've had enough football flooding your life, this would be a pretty good weekend to do so. Four matchups of ranked teams, at least according to the USA Today coaches poll. Wisconsin at Michigan, that's number 19 at number 7. Villanova, defending champs, at Marquette, 14 against 10. Marquette just lost to former LCA product Greg Williams at St. John's. We'll see if they can rebound. You've also got Louisville at Florida State, 16 at 22 there. And then probably your matchup of the conference slate so far. I know they always have a lot of great games in Madison Square Garden and some of the pre-conference matchups. But how about this in the ACC? Number 2 Duke at number 3 Virginia. That's going to be a late afternoon game tomorrow. So you can catch that one even after LSU and Auburn have come and gone. The Tigers ball game, both of them playing one another, different stripes, of course. That's going to be 1 p.m. inside the PMAC. And, as I've kind of alluded to, that's just about a matchup of ranked teams. Auburn, at 5-4, has won 3 games in a row. And again, this is a game that could catapult LSU into maybe being about the number 15 team in the country. According to the net rankings, they might even creep up on 10, 11 overall. They're at 13 right now. And then if Auburn wins, as I mentioned, pretty good chance that they are right back in to the top 25 if they've got 4 dubs in a row, and one of them is at white-hot LSU. So, again, you want to catch up to college basketball. Not a bad weekend to do so. And before we hit a break, a reminder, this would be another great opportunity to catch up to high school basketball, played at a very high level. Tonight, after Bumper to Bumper Sports, 7 o'clock, the pregame show, about 7:30, maybe 7:40, we'll have tip-off. It's Northside at STM. And so far, during this tour of District 4, 4A games, I've only seen 3 teams. The Cougars, Cairncrow, Westgate. We're going to get a little new blood tonight. I'm very much looking forward to seeing the Vikings here playing inside the Cougar Dome. The only other time they played this season, it was a win for Billy Sanye and Northside. We'll see if STM can get back even tonight. And then a brief programming reminder, our finale for these high school basketball games will be next Friday, the 15th. But because of a conflict with LSU baseball, yes, of course, we're going to let you hear Chris Blair and company here on Acadiana Sports Station. We're going to move Westgate at Northside next Friday to our sister station, The Rewind. That's 97.7 FM, 1330 AM here in Lafayette, 104.1 in Lake Charles. So great high school basketball, great college basketball. It's time to immerse yourself fully. We're going to take a break. When we return, LSU, UL, which signees you're most excited about for both football programs. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back out to the south side of Lafayette on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Some breaking news on the college football front. Bumper to Bumper Sports rejoins you on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, the famous Glenn D, taking you home on this Friday, February the 8th. Before we get to our singer, some questions of the day, I'll get to walk back something that I bemoaned about 30 minutes ago. Said there's really not a lot new happening, not a lot to report. Well, now there is, and both of them are in the world of college football. First off, the NC2A, within the last 20 to 30 minutes, has granted Ohio State quarterback transfer Justin Fields immediate eligibility. You will recall, one of the top quarterbacks in the country in the class of 2018, just spent his true freshman season at the University of Georgia, played and actually played pretty well in a sparing role in LSU's win over Georgia. They didn't go to the well very often with Justin Fields, and they really didn't down the stretch of the season either. Probably part of the reason he opted to transfer to Ohio State, even with Urban Meyer stepping down. And it was expected for many that the NCAA would grant him immediate eligibility. Now the word is just official. But I think what this does, it knocks another brick out of the wall for preventing kids to transfer and then play right away. There are far too many examples of these coaches doing it. Some of them stay at the college level after they bounce on a kid, literally sign him one day, bounce a day or two later. Some of them go up to the next level, become an assistant at the professional ranks. And some of them are fired, like Cliff Kingsbury, and then become a head coach in the professional ranks. No matter how it happens, it almost always seems patently unfair to the kids. And so I think you'll see more and more opportunities for the NCAA to just let these kids get in the transfer portal, go somewhere, and play right away. Is that going to open up a whole other can of worms? You bet it is. but I think the way it is now, my opinion, is slanted against the kids and is unfair. But interesting, former Georgia quarterback Justin Fields immediately eligible, and yeah, he will be your starter next year at Ohio State. After all, that's the reason Tate Martell transferred, right? Another bit of breaking news, and this one will have an LSU tie to it. According to Billy Lucci, and look, if anybody knows anything going on with Texas A&M Sports, it's the executive editor at TexAgs.com. But Billy reporting in the last 15 to 20 minutes that Jimbo Fisher and A&M have added Josh Henson to the staff as O-line coach. Number one, that's Jimbo getting the gang back together. If you followed LSU football long enough, you know that Josh Henson, about 10 or 12 years ago, was finishing up a stint as LSU's tight ends coach and recruiting coordinator, a guy that was hired under, I believe, Saban. I mean, the very, very latter portion of Saban. If not, it was year one of Miles, but it was right there in that 04, 05 range, maybe as early as 03. But Henson spent time at LSU, recruiting coordinator. He played at Oklahoma State, longtime assistant for the Pokes as well under Mike Gundy. And A&M is getting him as the O-line coach. I'm telling you right now, there are so many reasons why I feel strongly about this. The Aggies are going to become something serious. The question is not if, it's just when. Yeah, their schedule is brutal this year. They've got Bama, Georgia, Clemson, LSU all in the schedule. Three out of those four, I believe, are away. So I'm not sure the Aggies' resurgence is coming right away in 2019. But this, talk about the bricks that are taken out of the wall for the transfer portal. Here's another brick built into the wall by Fisher and company, getting one of his buddies, Josh Henson, to coach up the O-line. All right, enough of the news. CD, let's play the music, and then I've got a couple of questions.
Love, exciting and new.
Real simple question. And we're going to repeat it, one for LSU, one for UL. But which recent signee that was wrapped up either Wednesday or in the early period, so which signee in the class that was finalized Wednesday are you most excited about? And I am going to give you some options. Too often we give you open-ended questions and, well, we test your creativity. That's probably our bad. Let's give you some options here. Which LSU signee from this 2019 class are you most excited about? And I'll give you the options of offensive lineman Cardell Thomas, cornerback Derek Stingley, quarterback Peter Parrish, or running back John Emery. CD, have we lost connection, brother?
No, we're good, man. We're good.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I suddenly couldn't hear anything in the background, so got a little nervous there. Live radio, brother. All right, so let me run that back again. Now that, you know, we played the Verizon game and you can hear me now. Which LSU signee are you most excited about? Cardell Thomas, Derek Stingley, Peter Parrish, John Emery. And if you have an option outside of those four, you know we'll take it. On the UL side, to me this is intriguing because, as Shea Dixon will tell you on the trail tomorrow morning, Billy Napier signed two of his three most highly rated players, according to 247, on Wednesday. Seriously. And one of them was Lakemian Franklin, an outside linebacker from Neville High School. So I'm going to give you Franklin as one of your four options for the Cajuns. I'll also give you a local favorite, Kaplan defensive lineman, Quentlin Cobb, Brandon LeJean, wide receiver, athlete, and a great return man at E.D. White High School in Thibodaux, and then Kendall Wilkerson, a defensive end from Kentwood High School. So those are the options I'm going to give you on the LSU side, on the UL side. But as always, if you want to be creative and explore the space, you can come up with your own. 706-0111. So, Clint, now that I've tested out our line and you can hear me, give me your picks.
With the Cajuns, I think it's simple. I think I got to go with Brandon LeJean. The dude just has it going on. I like what I've heard about him over his senior season. The guy really has the potential to be one of the better wide receivers heading into 2019 and beyond. I think with the Cajuns, it's simple, mind you. Franklin, I don't know a whole heck of a lot about, but I'm almost certain if I do listen on the trail tomorrow, and I probably will because it's right before the producers, I'll definitely be more interested in what LaKamian Franklin brings to the table. That being said, when you look at LSU, I got to say Derek Stingley Jr., just because what Brent Indes told me a while back about Stingley, said that he's probably one of the best high school players he had ever seen. That's saying something, considering the guy has seen a lot of talent over the years.
I'll start on the UL side as well, and I am going to steal at least a little bit of the thunder from Shea Dixon. And I know this because when we huddled up, strategized for tomorrow's show, he said, here's what I want to bring to the table. I'll leave the stats for Shea tomorrow morning. But just trust me when I tell you, LaKamian Franklin, a late bloomer who was very overlooked at Neville High School. And a kid that, I mean, double-digit sacks, tremendous, with a hand in the ground, which Billy Napier, he told me that in our interview on Wednesday, said Franklin was probably an undersized defensive end at the high school level. He said, for us, there's no question about it. He's going to line up an outside linebacker. He's going to have an opportunity to rush the quarterback. Think of Bill Cowher just getting in the linebacker's face. Rush the quarterback. I think Franklin might be a stud, and it might be quickly for Ron Roberts in that defense. But a nice secondary pick, I think, there is Quentlin Cobb. And anybody who's seen the Kaplan Pirates, you don't see a guy move his feet with the frame and body that big very often. Playing the running back, wing back position, doing just about everything defensively, kicking it, punting it if you really need him. Quentlin Cobb might be one of the biggest steals for the Cajuns. In fact, if you do look at the 247 rankings, they've got Cobb as the highest-rated Cajun commitment and now signee. So I think one of those two on the defensive side, you'd be safe going in either direction. On the LSU side, I think I'm going to go with John Emery here. And I feel like it's, admittedly, doing a little devil's advocate, because I know Derek Stingley Jr. is the best, most highly rated prospect that LSU has signed since Leonard Fournette, if not even prior to that. That's a mouthful. And he could just help you in so many ways, not only on an island at cornerback. And if you heard him, he was on the debut of On the Trail way back when, Labor Day weekend. And I asked him, any chance, because LSU's had success putting some of their best cornerbacks inside, guarding the slot, any chance you do some of that as nickel? He said, no, man, respectfully, I don't play nickel. I'm an island cornerback, and that's what I do. And so from day one, that's what they'll expect him to do. He could help you in the return game, kicks, punts. And if you watch Dunham this year, he might have been the best wide receiver in the state. All due respect to Devontae Lee. All due respect to a number of players that I think could vie for that type of title. But still, I'm going to go with Emery, because LSU football is always better when it has a stud horse running back. And that's not just a recent memory thing. That's an always thing. LSU this year, in a lot of ways, got better play than expected out of Brissett, maybe even out of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But those are complimentary guys that were shoehorned into bigger roles than maybe otherwise they'd be destined for. I think John Emery's got a chance to come in and really, really change the landscape of that stable in the backfield. That includes Edwards-Helaire. That includes Baby Beast Mode, Chris Curry, who took a red shirt this last year. I'm awfully excited to see what John Emery Jr. is all about, because the hype coming out of Destrehan is palpable. All right, a lot of your response so far on social media, none on the program. That's okay. We got more opportunities on the other side of this break. Plus, an update on Anthony Davis, not the trade market, but the role he'll play for Alvin Gentry the rest of this regular season. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Hang with us. We're coming right back in to the Cougar Dome on the campus of St. Thomas More, live on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Just about 10 minutes until 5 o'clock. We're back on the campus of St. Thomas More High School. And, of course, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. We've made it 50 minutes, and the name Anthony Davis hasn't really come out of my mouth yet. So that is a blessing in and of itself, but it is about that time. We get back to schedule, right? That's all the NBA wants us talking about the last couple of weeks. So the latest update has nothing to do with where he's going to be traded, what might be offered. The latest update is that he's going to play. And something just is eating away at my insides on this subject. Something tells me that there was a bit of a mandate, maybe even a reprimand in advance that was coming down from Commissioner Adam Silver here. Something tells me they weren't going to allow the Pels to sit their best asset and make sure that he is fresh, clean, healthy, and worth every darn penny come this offseason. Because Alvin Gentry and company have announced that Anthony Davis will return to the team. He's been cleared to play. He'll return, I should say, not only to the practice floor, but he'll begin to play again for the Pelicans. And on that subject, our guy, most popular reporter in America the last 2 weeks for good reason, Adrian Wojnarowski of the Mothership. Here's his tweet earlier today. This is what to expect with Anthony Davis usage the rest of the way. Fewer, if any, back-to-backs, and a reduction in minutes from his 37 per game. So again, sound this out with me. If they aren't forced to play him in back-to-backs, they're not going to. Sounds like they're going to do the bare minimum to satisfy maybe some requirements that aren't being shared in the public. And I'll connect that dot to this one. I saw one of the most amazing bottom ticker lines ever over this weekend. If you enjoyed this as well, feel free to call in. 706-0111. LeBron James, we know, is back. His Lakers beat the Celtics. Rondo got him at the buzzer last night. But LeBron hasn't played every single game possible since coming back. And when he didn't play, I believe Saturday, the bottom ticker read, and you can't make this up, and no, I'm not trying to give you one of the old Allen Michaels special nasty jokes here. This is literally what it said. LeBron James, and then in parentheses, load management out for tonight's game. So that's exactly what Greg Popovich was doing for years, right? The NBA was frustrated. The transition from Stern to Silver, this was one of the huge topics. And an outcry from fans and season ticket holders. Well, I paid good money to watch the home team, but I also paid good money to watch LeBron when he comes to town. And he's just going to sit? Or if the Spurs were coming to town, wait a minute. I was jacked up about coming to see the Spurs. The ticket prices were jacked up because the Spurs are in town. And Pop's going to sit? Three of his four best players? That was a huge topic of discussion, even on this show 2-3 years ago. And now, seemingly, you can rest the guy for, and I quote, load management. To me, it's absolutely hilarious that you even have to specify as much. The concept that you could do it, it makes complete sense to me. Herm Edwards on you here. You play to win the game. I'm not going to give you that voice. You can hear it in your own head. You play to win the game, and ultimately, you play to win a championship. It's the end of the discussion. And so if Pop wants the rest, guys, do what you do. But now all of a sudden, well, load management is the reason that LBJ is not playing occasionally. And here we go. I'll give some credit. The famous Clint D put it on a platter for me. I hadn't been able to find this exactly. So thank you, my good friend Clint. There's a report out there. Adam Wells, we'll give the credit to him. The Pelicans are risking a $100,000 per game fine if they bench Anthony Davis. Again, that's a report. So there you go. There is a peek at Oz behind the curtain. The Pelicans aren't even allowed to tank like the rest of the league. I'm telling you, I'm not a big black helicopters guy. I never have been. I tried to not fully buy everything that was presented after the NFC title game. They're out to get the Saints. They're out to get Sean Payton. They want the bigger market team. I try not to buy into that stuff because it's a load of something else. Not load management, it's a load of phooey in my mind. But boy, there just continue to be more and more opportunities for me to buy into that if I so chose. The commissioner is going to fine the Pelicans 100 large a game if they sit Anthony Davis. I mean, I asked this question, admittedly haven't done the legwork, but how many season ticket holders do the Pelicans have, number one? And then number two, if you were to poll Morris Bart and the other 35, you think they might be in support of benching Anthony Davis to tank and get one of the top three overall picks? You think if you polled the season ticket holders that they might just be okay with that? But, boy, we would hate to dilute the potency of your league and these last, whatever it is, 35 games for one of the league's absolute worst teams. We would hate for that to happen. So, yeah, I made it just about an entire hour with talking about Anthony Davis because I don't really care to go down the road of the trade part. The only part that should matter right now is the Pelicans getting the most value from that trade when it happens after this season, and then getting the best pick that they can due to their lack of performance. There's a reason, other than getting money off the books and maybe doing a solid for Nico Mirotic, who's been great for them the last year plus, there's a reason they got rid of Nico. The operation from here on out is to lose ball games. And the league's going to potentially fine him $100K per. And so, Clint, maybe you can help me with this. Let's do some quick research here. Give me the record of the Pelicans. Then I'll do a little bit of math. Let's figure out what their record is. Figure out how many games are left. And then your boy will do some fiduciary digging real quick on the program. What's the record for these New Orleans Pelicans, Clint?
It is currently 24-31. If my math's correct, that is 55 games. About to play game 56 tonight.
27 games are left in the regular season. So even if that is, what, 2.7 mil? My math can't be that bad. Yeah, that sounds about right. 2.7 million. That might just be worth it. If Anthony Davis gets hurt sometime in the next 27 games, the league should have to pick up the bill for what the Pels will miss out on in terms of some trade value. That's absolutely mind-blowing to me. LeBron James can get away with load management. He also is trying to orchestrate a trade for Anthony Davis, who, by the way, we're going to force you to play for the team you're on. I know I've got a throwing shade segment coming up and probably just went a little too early on that subject, but, man, that doesn't make sense to me. All right, CD, how about one final word?
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Freely, I think we're about to see, as I told you earlier in the hour, an opportunity for transfers in the NCAA level to move a lot more freely. Again, you just joined us. Some of the news of the late afternoon, the NCAA has granted Justin Fields immediate eligibility at Ohio State. Guy played at Georgia last year. Transferred to Columbus. Now he's going to be the starting quarterback for the Buckeyes. I hope they're all, sooner than later, able to move freely. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back. James Moran talking LSU baseball. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one. We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
It's time to get you ready for LSU baseball. Step into the on-deck circle with James Moran on 1037 The Game.
Some kind of professional. We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. And, of course, this is a Friday, February 8 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. You heard the intro. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline, and it's time for the first of our weekly hits with James Moran. He is the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, and every week, Friday, 5 o'clock, he'll take us to the on-deck circle. How are you, James?
Doing well, Ben. I like the sounder there. Good work by you and your guys out there.
I will take no credit, but I appreciate all the work done behind the scenes. And I want to get to, because we don't have a game to preview, a bit of a season preview and an overview. A freshman or two whose name is not Landon Marceau that you're most excited about this year.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I'd go with Jaden Hill and Cole Henry, two guys I'd lump in that mix, two freshmen that, well, I don't know if they're as polished as Marceau. They're similarly talented, and I think if not this year, the next year they're going to be very integral parts of this pitching staff. And this year that might mean they're hard-throwing guys out of the bullpen. And I think that's, you know, when you're talking about having multiple guys that can bring in with, you know, swing and miss stuff out of the bullpen, that's a luxury LSU has not had before. And they also offer depth in a starting rotation if, say, a Zach Hess or an Eric Walker are hurt or somebody's ineffective. I think Marceau's going to obviously be the guy that starts the year in the rotation in that Saturday spot. And he's probably the best of the bunch in terms of being ready to contribute right now. But Jaden Hill and Cole Henry, I think, are guys that will contribute and have really big futures here. If you want a position player, an under-the-radar guy I have my eye on is Giovanni DiGiacomo. He's going to be the fourth outfielder. Their plan was for him to start this year, but their plan was kind of disrupted when Zach Watson and Antoine Duplantis both came back. I think they thought they might get one of them back. I don't think anyone ever thought both of them would come back. That was kind of a good surprise, if you will. But because of that, he's now the fourth outfielder. But I think you're going to see him play a bigger role than that. It's just kind of a hunch I have that whether it means that one of those guys is going to spend some time DHing or there's going to be kind of a revolving door where he either sees late game action or he's a pinch runner. He can fly, and he's got a little bit more power and a better hitter than you would think for a freshman outfielder. So he'd be kind of the guy under the radar that I would go with. And, you know, obviously whoever plays first base is also going to be a freshman, but that still has yet to sort itself out.
Needless to say, James, Giovanni DiGiacomo is an all-time name. And have you noticed
great
that
name.
Paul just lights up? It tickles him to no end when he gets to say his name.
Well, he's a very Italian man. He likes to talk with his hands. And if you don't talk with your hands when you say Giovanni DiGiacomo, you did not say it properly, in my opinion. Just one man's opinion, but I gave it.
You probably eat bread without olive oil. All right, we're going to continue our conversation. You're listening to the On Deck Circle with James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine. And I'm glad you mentioned late game base running, maybe some opportunities for DiGiacomo to star in a situation like that. How would you rate LSU and the way they'll go station to station, the way they'll stretch a single into a double, the way they'll steal bags last year as compared to what you expect this year?
This is an entirely more complete lineup than what they had last year. Last year, that was really their only offense, was kind of station to station, hope you can string two or three hits together and turn that into a run. This year, they've got speed. You know, Zach Watson's fast. Antoine Duplantis is fast. Zach Watson's fast. Josh Smith is pretty quick. You get a fully healthy Brant Broussard and Hal Hughes at the bottom of the order, guys that can, you know, move runners over, make things happen. But you've also got that power in the middle of your lineup. I think they're expecting big things from Daniel Cabrera, obviously. But Saul Garza, who is a catcher, but he will not catch for at least 2 months. He's coming back from a torn meniscus, but he is cleared to hit. And he can hit. He hit 23 home runs at Howard Junior College last year. He's probably going to bat third or fourth or fifth for this team, and he's going to be a guy that's counted on to bring some juice to the middle of that lineup. Brock Mathis, their catcher, I think he's going to be kind of like a Mike Papirski offensively, where I don't think he's going to hit for a particularly high average, but apparently both him and Garza have been denting their new scoreboard, where they've had to send guys out there on a pretty regular basis to reset the light bulbs in their new video board and left, because both of the new catchers have been hammering balls off them in BP. So I think they still have that speed, that station-to-station element. Maybe they have guys that are more mature and maybe better able to advance runners and that kind of thing. But to me, the biggest difference is with Smith back, with the Cabrera in for his sophomore year, which I think will be an even better year, and with those two catchers that really bring some more juice to the lineup, this is a team that doesn't have to wait around for three hits to get a run anymore. They got some guys that can hit a ball a long way.
James, which test do you expect might be the biggest out of ULM, Army, and Air Force that are coming to town? And Are there any individual elements, maybe a particular starting pitcher that those guys are bringing to town that could potentially give Tiger fans some decent competition?
I would think it's going to be Air Force, but ULM, I don't know. ULM, I think, is going to be the best hitting team out of the three. I've heard they got a pretty veteran team, some of those kind of JUCO guys that are just kind of grown men that can hit the ball, you know, that you kind of see from schools like that sometimes. I think Air Force is going to be a very well-coached team. They can might do the most in terms of bunting and hitting and running and kind of seeing if this LSU defense is up to snuff in the early going. And I don't expect both those service academy teams, you know. I'd be lying if I told you I had watched any tape on them. But you kind of think of it like Army or Navy or Air Force football where they run that option. What they do is not complicated, but they do it very well, and they do it very efficiently. And I would expect that that's what you'd see from these service academy teams. I don't think they're going to be wildly talented, or either one of these teams is going to have an ace that comes in here and kind of is whoa, you didn't expect to see that coming. He's pumping 95 by you, but I bet they both have teams, the guys that throw strikes. They can probably play defense behind them. And they do the little things offensively that, if you are sloppy in the field, can turn into real problems.
Another moment or two with our guy, James Moran, on Twitter, at Smartest Moran. How do you envision the non-conference working out in terms of working out kinks, not only with the starting rotation, but the back end of the bullpen as well? We know that Maneri's got a lot of options, but how many weeks, ideally, would he like to see this thing play out before maybe he decides on things, all things equal with health?
I don't think they want it written in stone by this point, but they're going to want to have their three-man rotation solidified by the time they go to Texas on March 1st. That's just my opinion. The first week, they're going to go Zach Hess, Landon Marceau, Eric Walker in the weekend, and then they play two midweek games, so I'd expect Jaden Hill and Cole Henry, I don't know which order, but both to start games. The second week, if they all pitch well, they're probably going to do it again because they play 10 games in the first 14 days, so they're going to run those guys out there and see who has what. I mean, some of those guys are getting an opportunity to pitch on the road, which is a good opportunity to show yourself, because if you go pitch on the road and pitch well, even if it's against the, you know, somebody's going to have to pitch at Northwestern State, which is never going to be easy. That's a pretty good team year in and year out. And if a Jaden Hill or Cole Henry pitches well on the road there, that could really be kind of an eye-opening thing. But I would think they want to have it whittled down to three or four options by the time they go to Texas. But I just think they're going to end up with the three they start with being the three starters. You know, I mean, Hill and Henry are guys that can probably start and pitch pretty well in this league, but I just see them as guys that could also be very dominant as a reliever. Whereas a guy like Eric Walker, I think, you know, if he's not healthy and he's not right, that's one thing. But if he's healthy and he's right, he can help you as a starter, and I'm just not so sure he could help you as a reliever. So I think that's going to be he's kind of the quintessential Sunday guy, if you will. He's going to go out there and give you five or six innings or more if he's really on his game, because he can be very economic. But I just see that as his job, and he fits it very well, whereas I think the power guys, whoever doesn't stack up one or two, can really help you a lot more in the bullpen than Walker could. Now, in the terms of the bullpen, I think Todd Peterson's your closer. I don't think there's much doubt about that. He was so good down the stretch last year. He's been throwing the ball well in the spring. And then I think the young guys are just going to battle with guys like Devin Fontenot and Matt Beck, who were, you know, established themselves as pretty reliable relievers last year. And then it's just kind of a meritocracy. Whoever's throwing well out of that group, you throw in some other guys like Chase Costello, who's had his moments in the spring. Riggs Threadgill is a guy that was maybe their best reliever in the fall. He throws strikes with a heavy two-seam fastball. I mean, really, I guess, kind of the answer to your question is that I don't think they know exactly what they're going to do, but you can see just from watching them practice and watching them scrimmage that they have a lot more options than they ever had at any point last year, where they were kind of struggling just to fill out a weekend rotation with a three- or four-man bullpen behind it.
James, just one more. I had Paul Maneri on. At this point, it's probably been two and a half weeks. Yesterday, we had the good fortune of speaking with our mutual friend, Hunt Palmer. And every time we go through this
–
oh, Hunt the fan, absolutely. But we go through this litany of pitching options. Maneri accidentally omitted Mikhail Hilliard. Hunt kind of had him as an afterthought. Is there a chance he gets lost in the shuffle with all the options they suddenly have?
I don't think so, but I think they want to take it slow because he's had these recurring shoulder issues going back to the tail end of last year. Now, he's been healthy the last couple weeks. He pitched in a scrimmage earlier this week. He pitched it last Friday. I just think that they feel like they might have overtaxed him a bit last year. I don't think they did. But you got to remember that Mikhail Hilliard's about 140 pounds soaking wet, and his main pitch is a nasty breaking ball that's got to take a good amount of effort to snap off on a regular basis. I just think that he is, because they have so many big, strong guys for, you know, all these kids that I've been talking about in terms of starters, they're all about 6'4 and throw in the mid-90s. So I just think that those guys are kind of soaking up all the air, if you will, when you're talking about LSU's pitching staff. But I think Hilliard, if healthy, is a fascinating guy because he can start. He showed you last year that he can be excellent as a long man, but he can also be a guy that you bring in there to get you out of a tight jam because he can throw those big curveballs, and there's a lot of hitters, even in the SEC, that can't handle them. So I think that, I don't think he's an afterthought at all. I just think that they got to take it slowly until he shows them that he can pitch 2, 3, 4 weeks in a row without having some kind of setback with his shoulder issue that's been giving him trouble since last summer.
Take one for our on-deck circles this season with James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine in the books. James, before we let you go, is it about that time, memory serves, that the baseball preview comes out maybe a week before the season? And if so, where can the fans get it?
The baseball preview went to the printer on Tuesday. It'll be out on newsstands the middle of next week. We have to cut it a little bit closer these days because of the printing time. We get it printed. We get it published in Arkansas these days. But you're going to want it. You're going to want to pick it up. I promise you, the cover story is great. I'm a big fan of it. It's one of my favorite stories I've ever written in my time at Tiger Rag.
Okay, that's not a praise.
Josh Smith and, you know, the back injury and a lot of other things that he's gone through in his college career that you might not know about. It's good stuff. I would recommend it highly. If you're in Baton Rouge, which I would assume most of your audience isn't, you can order one online at TigerRag.com, and we'll send it right to you just for the cost of shipping.
You've written some dynamite stories, so this is your favorite. I'm pretty excited myself. James, thank you.
One of my favorites. Yeah, I like it, Ben. We got some good stuff cooking for opening day weekend. Opening day week next week.
Next Friday. We got room for you. Get ready.
Oh, I'm in. It's, hey, you bring the sounder, and I will bring the noise, I guess.
James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine. And, look, how about some of the intel there? Mikhail Hilliard, I think it was known that the shoulder wasn't exactly where they wanted it to be. So Alan Dunn and company, yeah, we know they've got other options. But I'm interested because that same interview that I've referred to several times now with Paul Maneri, it was a few weeks ago at the Tap Room, maybe even 3 weeks ago, and he mentioned Giovanni DiGiacomo. And so some of the speed that might be coming off of the pine late in games, this could be fun to watch. You might get awfully tired of hearing some of these announcers, unless they're Lynn Rollins and Ben McDonald, pronounce his name and chuckle after it. But this is going to be a very, very fun season. And our thanks to James for helping us play ball and get our first on-deck circle in the rear view. We're coming right back in, taking your phone calls, getting closer to tip-off between Northside and St. Thomas More, live from the Cougar Dome. That's coming your way at about 7:30. Right now, you've got Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Back from break and in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love Live, it's three straight weeks on Fridays. I've been out at the Cougar Dome on the campus of St. Thomas More. Don't forget, next week, we're going to be out at Northside High. I'm jacked up about that. You want to call in? The famous Clint D's got time for you. 706-0111. Feel free to react to everything that James Moran had to say. Give some of your thoughts. Hit us with your questions on LSU baseball. And speaking of questions, well, I ask them every day in the 4 o'clock hour. I asked earlier this week, without a lot of reception, frankly, what's going to be some of the determining factors in LSU getting to and winning the College World Series. Now that we've had Hunt and James on the last 2 days, you're welcome to weigh in. And we've also got two questions on the board from today. The LSU signee, whether they inked in the early period or on Wednesday, that you're most excited about football-wise in this 2019 class, ditto for the UL signing class. Any of that feels like your cup of tea? Again, we got some time for you. And speaking of recruiting, I just saw this on the Twitter machine right before we came back from recess there. Appropriate that we're here at St. Thomas More. Caleb Holstein, starting quarterback for these Cougars. He'll suit up tonight and start, in all likelihood, against Billy Sonier and Northside. Holstein tweeting out about 30 minutes ago that he's received an offer from Harvard. That's big-time stuff. It was just about a year ago today. It was actually February 7, 2018. So a year ago yesterday, Holstein reported his first offer from Louisiana Tech, where another former Cougar, Nate Cox, currently is a scholarship quarterback. But the latest offer from Holstein, according to his Twitter feed, Harvard. Yeah, you got to have some intelligence to get that offer. So congrats to Caleb Holstein there. And CD, look, as we're jumping around a bit, I've made no bones about it. We've talked a decent amount of LSU baseball leading up to this season. We haven't had much UL conversation. I'm going to rectify that Monday when Jace Conrad joins us at 5:30, first of his weekly sets. But I want to get some of your early opinions. What do you make out of this team and maybe how they will compare to what the Raging Cajuns had last year on the diamond?
I think they'll be a little bit more improved. I think the biggest thing for me, I think we talked about a little bit more early in the week. I know we were talking about with LSU, but with the Cajuns, I think the biggest thing has to be getting hits. I think they need to start hitting a little bit better. I think they will. I think now that you got Hanson Maka back, you got some names that can wind up bringing the heat. I saw one of them during the fall practices that they had, wound up knocking a couple dingers out there. I like what I've seen from their offensive side, and obviously with Gunnar Leger there as your pitcher, the guy's going to wind up being an absolute monster. I think he's going to wind up having a bounce back year after being out last season due to injury. I think he's going to be able to return to form. I can't wait to see what he's going to do in 2019.
You know, a lot of the scuttlebutt I continue to hear is that outside of Leger, there's really a lot of uncertainty. And look, Gunnar, when right, is incredible. I mean, the guy's been a Sunbelt Conference Pitcher of the Year. But there probably is even some degree of uncertainty about a guy that's been on the shelf for an entire year, right? So I think there is some hesitancy for Raging Cajun fans buying into the pitching staff, even though they know they have arguably the best pitching coach in the country as their head coach. But I think there is expectation that offensively this group will be more of a consistent threat at the dish. All right, let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, great to hear from you on a Friday. What's going on? All right, Clint, do we have our man T lined up? Let me know, and if so, happy to get back out to him. Let's try it again on the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, can you hear me, brother?
Yeah, I got you now, Ben. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing well. What you got for us?
On your sink or swim, usually I agree with you on a lot of things, but I'm going to have to go with Derek Stingley only because the return game left a lot to be desired from last year. Oof. So I'm hoping that's where I see him do things, you know, that'll make that part of the game a lot better because we had some horrible punt return muffs and all that kind of stuff. So that's why I want to see him the most.
It is hard when the return game takes things off of the table. And 7/12/whatever uniform jersey number that Jonathan Giles was wearing last year was taking things off the table. So, yeah, if you could go from a minus to a plus in a game of inches, that could be worth miles.
Hey, I got you, Ben. Hey, have a good weekend, man. Love your show.
You too, T. You know, and look, I admitted that I was playing devil's advocate. I am acutely aware of just how ridiculously talented Derek Stingley is. I've told you this before. I'll remind you. His head coach at Dunham, Neil Weiner, way back in the day, was my freshman football coach at Catholic in Baton Rouge. And I was so advanced of a student, let's just put it that way, that I actually attended Catholic starting in the eighth grade. Okay, I'm probably joking a little bit there, but point being, I played freshman football twice. I had the Neil Weiner experience twice as a head coach, and the guy's dynamite, and he's doing great things with Dunham. But yeah, I've known for quite some time through Neil how prolific he is, and when Shea Dixon says the things that he does, he's the best player they've signed in a long time, maybe even past Booga Nation. I played a little devil's advocate. I gave you John Emery Jr. I think LSU football's better with a beast lead back. But the correct answer is probably Stingley. I'll admit it. Let's go back to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Chad, how are you today, man?
Doing well, Ben. Ben, I'm not going to keep you, man. I haven't listened due to work, man, but you might have hit on this. Man, what was your interpretation of Ogeron stating that they don't recruit like Alabama does? Just give me your interpretation on what you thought about that. What does it really mean in your eyes, man? And I'll hang up and listen, dude. Thank you.
You got it, man. And look, his voice may not be clear talking about Ed Ogeron, but I think that this is one of the clearest statements he's ever made. To me, it's clear as day. It is definitively, not loosely, it is definitively translated as Alabama is cheating. That's exactly what he was saying, right? Now, I am weary of anybody in college football throwing stones, because here's the inside scoop. Every single house is built of glass. Every single darn one of them. So I'll leave that on the tarmac. I'm not going to let that take flight any further. But he is saying when he – I think his quote yesterday was something to the effect of, we recruit A. Meat the right way. And then he also had another quote where he said, there are some guys at other schools that are recruiting these guys, when he's talking about the A. Meat kids, and they decide to go other places. I don't want to get into that, or I'm not going to get into that. He's absolutely speaking cloak and dagger, although it wasn't that subtle, and saying that Alabama is cheating. So he's not inferring it. He's basically out and out saying it. Not a doubt in my mind. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back in. Time to throw a little bit of shade, and it has to do with legalized tampering in the NBA. Apparently that's a thing. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're a thing, too, and we come at you every day. Start at 4 o'clock on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Right back into the Cougar Dome on the campus of St. Thomas More High School. I'm Ben Love, and you're listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. CD, I've decided that I'll make this announcement adjacent to throwing shade, and maybe it's appropriate. Some people want to throw it at me. You might even get the boo sounder ready, but I'll tell the people what is coming. Since I just teased on the trail tomorrow, the decision has been made that this will be the season finale of On the Trail. Notice I did not say that it's done. Finito, never coming back. But after, I don't know, however many weeks it's been, like 20 straight weeks, something like that, since Labor Day weekend, Shay and I are going to take a little bit of a break. And so the 2019 class is officially in the barn. I know that there are important Junior Day weekends coming up. I know that you need your fix. What I'll recommend to you is listen to this show Tuesdays at 5 o'clock. Shay will be here, or better yet, go sign up at go247.com. But I will tell you now that tomorrow, re-aired on Sunday, will be the final episode of this season of On the Trail. But we have some pretty cool ideas. Yes, yes, you may boo this man. It will be coming back in some reincarnation. That much I can promise you. But soak it in while you can. Tomorrow's episode is going to be dynamite. All right, enough of that. It is time for your daily reminder. It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing sea metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust in their management. Top down, it starts with Mark. It's important to execute a vision. They're going to help you create one as well. Nothing cookie cutter about it. And you'll be able to trust their professional installers, Alex and Todd, inside your home. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game in 2019. And all it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all. for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
This will be 2 days in a row that the NBA is going to give us our latest example of a tissue paper soft culture that we live in for the most part these days. Some of you out there, you insulate yourself from it. Good on you and God bless. I cover sports for a living. I like the NBA, and so I just can't divorce myself from it. I can't get away from the soft culture. And here's the latest iteration of that. LeBron James and the Greek Freak are your team captains, the West and the East, that are picking NBA All-Star teams. I like the pick'em format, by the way. I like it better than the fan vote. I'm cool with these guys picking their own teams and then going head-to-head, pick-up ball style. But here are LeBron James' first six All-Star picks. You'll notice that they're all really good players, by the way, but there's a commonality they all have. In order, LeBron picked Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, Anthony Davis, and Klay Thompson. All the credit in the world to the mothership stats department here. Here are the status after this season updates for all six of those picks for LeBron. Kevin Durant, he's got a player option after this year. Kyrie Irving, he's got a player option. Kawhi Leonard, player option. James Harden, okay, he's under contract, so we can strike him off the list. Anthony Davis, Cat's already requested a trade. And then Klay Thompson, free agent. And so the phrase legalized tampering can now enter all of our lives, and very regrettably so. LeBron has literally been called to the carpet and been asked to defend himself from these actions. You've got to be kidding me. And so LeBron's response, and I'll paraphrase, good on LBJ, the Kang, came out and said that there is no such thing as tampering during the All-Star break. And he's 100% right. Are you kidding me? Because you were the best player in your conference, had your druthers of who to pick, and you pick some guys who are going to be free agents next year, you're tampering? That needs to be investigated? I am so over some of this stuff. This whole reverse tampering that the Pelicans were accused of yesterday as the trade deadline came and passed with Anthony Davis. Well, it's counter-espionage. It's in the game, man. Get over it. And now LeBron having to defend himself from legalized tampering. The association wants everybody barking about player movement, and they're getting exactly what they want. But we need to put our foot in the ground, and we need to put a halt to some of this BS. LeBron is in the crosshairs for seemingly everything. Some he deserves. This one, he does not. He picked some of the best players in the world to be on his All-Star team. That's the end of the story. And guess what? If they go to the All-Star game and they decide to ride the banana boat in between and party like him, Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade like to do, if they hit the banana boat, if they go have a little LBJ vino, he probably makes his own and just doesn't sell it to us. If they decide to do that, who freaking cares? It's in the game. The NBA really needs to think about some of the stuff that it has us talking about.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Legalized tampering. Just Charmin soft right there. NBA, do better. All right, we got to take our final break of this hour. When we return, you can respond to any and everything that you've heard so far. LSU Hoops getting ready for a big game against Auburn. Might be able to vault into the top 15 with a win. We could talk recruiting classes, LSU and UL, or you can go in on the NBA. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're coming right back to the campus of St. Thomas More High School, live on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Back in for the final time during the 5 o'clock hour. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from St. Thomas More High School on 103.7 The Game. Now, I left this topic behind about an hour ago. I think it's time to pick it up. Different crowd in the vehicle, and some of you may not have an opportunity to call in when we first got there. You can now. 706-0111. The latest turn in the Anthony Davis story has nothing to do with who's going to trade for him. It's all about what the Pelicans aren't allowed to do, apparently, not officially, but apparently, to protect their most valuable asset, maybe ever, even including CP3. But the strong hint that the Pelicans weren't going to play Davis even when healthy down the stretch of this season. And by the way, Clinton, I did the math. They have 27 games left, including tonight. Alvin Gentry has said for a while that is a Dell Demps in front office question. And now I think the NBA is taking it out of their hands, not allowing it to even be a question. The report from Brian Windhorst, Adrian Wojnarowski, and the gang at the mothership is that NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has stepped in, and it's been insinuated that any Anthony Davis games where he doesn't play, when healthy, save for like the second leg of a back-to-back, will result in the Pelicans being fined $100,000. And that just boggles my mind. And I'll take you back to two different reference points that, for me, leap to mind here. The first, and we went through this whole rigmarole a year or two ago when Pop was sitting all of his guys. And like most things Greg Popovich does, he did it smartly. He sat at least three, if not four, of his best players on the same night. Look, if I'm going to get them rest, I'm just going to take my L. I'm not spreading it out. I'm not risking the chance at losing, I don't know, three or four games to get these guys rest. We're going to sit them in the same game, take our chances with that one, and then they'll all be back. And typically he would do it on the second leg of a back-to-back. So this was met with a lot of opposition by the league, a lot of season ticket holders, and especially people that wanted to see the Spurs when they came to town. Or it might be the case that it was the Cavs with LeBron when they came to town. And so we had to do something about that. Until apparently we didn't. Because literally 3 or 4 days prior to this recent bombshell with the Pels, have to play AD or else they risk getting fined, 100 G's per contest. Just 3 or 4 days ago, I see on the bottom ticker where LeBron is sitting out and the injury inside the parentheses that you always see is listed as load management. So clearly, coming back from an injury, the Lakers are allowed to do whatever they want with the best player in the league, who coincidentally has his representation actively and publicly trying to recruit Anthony Davis. So you tell me just how equitable any of this is. And again, I'll open up the phone line, 706-0111. But trust me, this isn't sports talk radio that's trying to pander to you. I'm not trying to rile you up. But the honest truth is this. First, the Saints get the raw end of the deal. But worse than that, they aren't given a man-to-man, face-to-face apology, handshake, any form of a response, really, from Roger Goodell. That's bad enough. But then the other New Orleans franchise, and yes, as we all know, it's owned by the same person, Gail Benson, the Pelicans are now given this slap to the face. Because after they trade Nico Mirotic yesterday, right before the deadline came and went, in an effort to do a solid on the part of Nico, but then also to tank, let's be clear here. The Pelicans are trying to do what's best for their franchise. It's the same thing that the Cavs have done pre and post LeBron when he leaves town and leaves a wake in his path. Same thing that the 76ers have done with getting so many number one overall picks within a span of a few years. So many around the league have done this, have taken their sweet time and rested players from injury coming back because they want to improve the future of their franchise. But a franchise from New Orleans wants to do that, and boy, it just must not be your couple of weeks, New Orleans. It just must not be your time. Of course, Anthony Davis in his press conference said it's his time. So my only question to you is, when exactly is it New Orleans' time? again, not trying to pander to you, but it's just the incredible string of circumstances continues with this latest development. And I can't help but react to it any other way. At $100,000 a game, again, there's going to be, you know, the back end of a back end, you know, back to back. We get that. And so maybe that leaves, I don't know, three games where the Pelicans can rest him and not get fined. Let's say it's even five, just for the purposes of round numbers. You're telling me that the Pelicans are risking fine of up to $2.2 million if they decide to protect their trade value out of Anthony Davis when they have absolutely no reason to play him? They've actually got incentive not to play him so they can lose and tank and get a higher draft pick? It's absolutely ridiculous to me. So something that we touched on in the 4 o'clock hour, and I wanted to bring it back right now. CD, not asking you to necessarily go down that same road, but let's put you in the shoes of a season ticket holder for the Pelicans. How would you react if the team announced and was up front with it that they were shutting Anthony down for the remainder of the regular season?
I'd be frustrated if I were a fan of the Pelicans at this point in the season. I mean, we talked about it. They're below 500. Why would you try and almost sabotage your chances of trying to get at least a top-level pick? Because I understand that the idea is to wind up trying to go for the Knicks pick down the line, but that's not necessarily assured until you get to see the ping pong balls go the way they are. Right now, they're 13th in the Western Conference. How can you not start tanking now? I understand the NBA doesn't want tanking to be a thing anymore, but how can you not try and come up with a game plan to where you don't have to deal with this? I'd be okay if you had to pay Anthony Davis or pay the NBA $2.7 million to wind up making sure Anthony Davis's value and stock value for a trade isn't hurt at all.
Well, I've got a thought on that, but to clarify, you'd be frustrated with the circumstances. If you were a season ticket holder, though, you wouldn't be frustrated at all. You'd probably be excited if they said, you know what, we're not playing him anymore.
Yeah, of course, because then you're tanking, then you're getting ready to potentially get a pick from the New York Knicks. I think that'd be the ideal situation to get that from the New York Knicks, because they seem to be, according to all the projections, to be the number one pick.
So whether or not you go out and watch Stanley Johnson, Jason Smith, and some of these guys on a two-month tryout period, whether or not you'd go watch them this year is one story, but knowing that the franchise is trying to put itself in better stead, you'd be happy with that. But here's the other thing I'll suggest to you that we haven't brought up yet. I would bet a lot of money that the amount per game would increase if the Pelicans try to play chicken with Adam Silver on this one. So in other words, if they say, all right, well, we hear you. $100,000, no problem. You've got our credit card number, just ping it, because we're going to start sitting him every single game. So my suggestion to you, CD, is that after about five or seven games of that, the ante would go up. And you might be to the point by the end of the regular season where you're coming out of pocket a half milli every time he sits down.
And, you know, that definitely does sound about right. They're going to have to wind up anting up and making sure it's a bigger deal once you get to about 10 games, maybe 12 games. That way you make sure it's like, hey, get him on the field. Get him on the court. I don't care. That's what the NBA is basically saying. Get him on the court.
They're going to be no, basically, monopoly likes being defied. And so, you know, the NBA, all these professional organizations, they'll eventually get their way. They'll eventually get what they want. And if you defy them openly, they're going to make sure it hurts you in the pocketbook. That's just typically the way these things go in my experience. All right, we'll shut down the AD talk, at least for now. His name has to come up at least three times per B2BS episode. The association decrees it, and so I don't want to get fined by Adam Silver at this point. But right now, we're waiting on the end of the JV game, STM, Northside High, about 50 seconds to go in regulation, 55-44. Cougars on top of the Vikings. I'll give you the rundown of what we have in store. Here in front of me, after this, we'll watch the girls' varsity game. And then we're expecting at about 7:30, maybe 7:40, it'll be tip-off between the boys' varsity, Northside, at St. Thomas More. Between now and then, we're going to have Eric Mouton aboard on the other side of this hour break. Former player, former coach here at STM now with the one and only Blue Gators of Ascension Episcopal. So excited about that. You'll hear an interview with Eric Mouton at 6. Clint will have the best of the week, 6:30 to 7, and then we'll get right into the pregame show at 7 o'clock. We could take a call, but we better be quick. Let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Craig, I got about 45 seconds. They're yours.
Hey, Ben. Listen to you with Anthony Davis call and talking about how the NBA is telling him he has to play without, you know, the Falcons, but they never said how long he has to play per game.
It's a very, very good point. Adrian Wojnarowski of the Mothership is reporting that he won't play second leg of back-to-backs and that his minutes per game average will drop from where it is right now at 37. But I think that our man Craig might have just found that loophole for Alvin Gentry and company. All right, he's going to start. And then at the first horn, he's done. He's out. Smartest guy in the room is Craig, and we do appreciate the call. All right, now we are going to throw it to our hour break. On the other side, we're going to lead off with Eric Mouton. Excited to talk to him not only about high school hoops, but he's doing a great job as the Raging Cajun color analyst for Hoops Games on ESPN+. Hour number three coming at you. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Cougar Dome on the campus of St. Thomas More on 103.7 The Game.
Listening to 103.7 The Game on your Amazon Echo is easy. Just enable the Alexa skill for 103.7 The Game on the Alexa app from your mobile device. Just say, Alexa, ask 103.7 The Game to play live.
It's so easy, anyone can do it.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
Welcome back inside the Cougar Dome, home of St. Thomas More High School. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. Doing our best right now to not trample a senior night for these young ladies here. The St. Thomas More Lady Cougars fixing to take on the Northside Lady Vikings. Now there's applause, and I don't feel so awkward. Let's get somebody else in the conversation. Out to the Artco Equipment Hotline, a man who knows tons about this program. Played here, coached here, championships here, and now doing a tremendous job wearing a hat as the head basketball coach at Ascension Episcopal, the athletic director, and lately, alongside Dan McDonald, doing a tremendous job as the Raging Cajun color analyst for Hoops on ESPN+. It's Eric Mouton. Coach, how are you?
Ben, I'm great, man. How you doing? How's everything looking in the Cougar Dome?
It is pristine here. Coach Steven Stroney getting ready for senior night, and certainly you know plenty about that. So fill us in on the Blue Gators and the latest as you head toward the playoffs.
Yeah, Blue Gators are battling, man. We've come a long way with a young team. You know, probably not as many wins as we'd like, but I'm telling you, the last 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, our young group has really stepped up and played some pretty good basketball. We're in a very tough district. Franklin's leading our district right now. A big, quick, athletic team, which is a lot of our teams in our district. But our young kids are growing up, man. We only start one senior, then we start two juniors and two sophomores. So, you know, the wins aren't coming right now, but I think down the road the wins will be there. Our middle school program had an unbelievable year. Daniel Gautreau, the AD down there for me. Our teams have won championships in the fifth grade, the sixth grade came out runner-up, and then seventh and eighth grade champions. So the future is bright in Blue Gator territory.
And it's always fun to call a game, even take a game in the swamp. And, you know, you and I have spoken a good bit, Coach Desimo as well in the gridiron, about the move from 1A to 2A and what it's meant for football. What has that meant for some of your other sports, including boys and girls basketball? All right, I'm not sure if we've lost Coach there. CD, you'll let me know, and hopefully we can resume that shortly. But having a conversation with Eric Mouton, and we just got a little bit of insight into the boys' basketball season. All right, we've got Coach now. Coach, my question for you is, how has the move from 1A to 2A impacted some of the non-football sports of the Blue Gators?
It's been great for every other sport, but basketball and maybe softball. Baseball is dominating that district along with Catholic High. They're 1-2 every year. The softball team has a couple of pretty good teams in there with Delcom and also Lauraville with very strong softball programs, and of course Catholic High as well. So we're adjusting there in 2A, and it looks like the next 2 years will be 2A again. So everybody's adjusting, and the success is starting to come.
We've had a lot of conversation, clearly, since the LHSAA meetings with folks on this show about where we're heading. Do you get the sense that everything that Mike Boyer proposed that's been ratified, Coach, do you get the sense this could lead us all back together eventually?
Man, I hope so, but I don't think so. I think it's too far gone. I think how everything is set up, people are starting to get not necessarily comfortable with it, but I think they're accepting it, and they're going to make it the best situation for their school. And you know, like you've talked about a lot, we'll have to see what the sponsors do as the select schools break away with their championships. And I hope it does. But I think it's too far gone. I don't think we'll ever get back together.
I want to ask you about some of your impressions on area basketball as well as the Raging Cajuns. But before we leave, Ascension Episcopal Athletics, please highlight your four boys and girls who signed on the dotted line Wednesday. That's such a cool day.
Yeah, it was awesome. We had signed two earlier in the year at the fall signing period, and then we're able to sign four more, so a total of six. So far, college athletes at Ascension Episcopal. We're going to send two baseball players, one to McNeese, Sean Michael Brady, and one to Neosho Community College in Kansas, and that's Austin Arsenault. So our pitcher and catcher are both going to continue their athletic careers. And then Sophia Boatwright is actually going to sign at Belmont Abbey. She signed, and she's going to go play tennis with her sister up there who signed last year. So Sophia Boatwright's heading to play tennis. And then we had a late signee on the volleyball side. We had signed Addie Vedrine in the fall, and now we just signed Hannah Mackey is going to go up to Millsap. So that's our signees. And then Gillian Barczyk signed to go in the fall to swim. So six of them heading on to the next level.
All right, I mentioned that we wanted to get to area basketball as we continue our conversation with former STM Cougar Eric Mouton, right now leading a heck of an athletic department for Ascension Episcopal. Who's caught your eye so far, in particular on the boys' side? And it could be teams that you thought would be good but not this good. Could be teams that are just completely surprising you. Give me some of your area rundown from here in Acadiana.
Well, one of the teams right down the road that I did not expect to be this good is Franklin. I mean, when the brackets come out, you need to take a look and see where they end up. They've got two big kids inside, and they always have shooters. And this year, they're shooting the lights out. So I look for them to make a deep run in the non-select in 2A. You know, and then other teams around the area that I always follow and I always just go watch at the Sunfish Shootout. You know, I love what Chris Kovac does at Karen Pro. Jake Dewitt, I had a chance to see his team play. You know, a lot of times they're a little undermanned and undersized. But Jake does a great job over there at Turling. And then, of course, you can never count out the Cougars and Coach Danny and what he does with the kids that he has. They seem to always overachieve.
Just what was it like? And, look, I can look to my right as we speak, and I'm seeing the 87 state finalist team, USA Today top 25. I mean, what was it like being here when this program was doing things like that? And, of course, adjacent to that was a state title. But what were the days like back then?
Man, the days were just unforgettable memories playing there and playing for Coach Danny and also the athletic director there, Coach Kim, who when he stepped aside of basketball, hung up his whistle and took the AD job. That's when I went back and was Coach Danny's assistant for 8 years before I came to Ascension. It was just great memories, man, and great guys that I still talk to today, and we still tell stories today. But we were a young school at that time, you know, only opening up in, I think, around 81 or 82. And all of a sudden in 86, you know, we win the state championship. They had some success early in baseball. Coach Doug Taylor in two-way, I think, won a two-way baseball state championship the first year the school was open, as they put together Fatima and Cathedral and some of the other private schools around the area. And it was just great times, man. We had a great team. Coach Danny worked us to death, you know, fundamentals. And we brought in a few kids that were talented, and, you know, Lyle Mouton on that squad, Mike Pratt, Damon Doucette, Roy Champagne, Troy Taylor, some of the names that if people out there are listening and got a chance to see us play, I know they remember those guys. And, yeah, I'm proud to be on the wall over there for some state championships. And then there's a couple of pictures up there as well, Ben, where I'm wearing a tie as Coach Danny's assistant. And we were able to – we never put the state championship up, but we had a state championship runner-up there.
So it was here that you became Dr. Fundamental, as you're known now on Twitter, right?
That's exactly right. When I started my player development program and about to start AAU with Dr. Fundamentals Elite, yes, it did. It all started there. I spent a lot of time in that small gym at St. Thomas More working one-on-one with kids, just helping them develop and helping them become better basketball players and better kids.
Coach, I've told you this in person, but I really enjoy when I have the opportunity to catch what you and Dan McDonald are doing as part of ESPN Plus for Cajuns basketball. Now, the level of basketball hasn't always been enjoyable. What has been so difficult for this team trying to rebound from the loss of Malik Marchetti, maybe especially on the defensive end?
Yeah, I think they, the last couple of years kind of run into a little bad luck. They have the year that they had last year, you know, winning the conference and everything and high hopes in the conference tournament, the hope to get back to that NCAA tournament and win a game for the first time since 1992 when there's a local point guard playing for that team. A couple guys get sick, a couple guys get hurt during the tournament, and then to lose Marchetti this year, just an unbelievable talent, an unbelievable player. Those coaches are doing the best that they can to try to find the right mixture of players, the right lineup, the right subs here and there. And they're going to keep these kids battling and competing, you know, until the final horn blows. I know that. But you're right. They've got to find the right combination. And when they shoot the basketball well, it seems like they defend better. And shooting cures a lot of weaknesses to your team. And when they're not shooting well, kind of like on Wednesday night, they didn't get it done on the defensive end. But I know those coaches are great coaches. They have experience. They know what they're doing, and they're going to find a way for this team to make a little run down the stretch behind Gant and Stroman.
A lot of Cajuns fans hoping that starts tonight, a rare Friday night game. Georgia State at UL, 8 p.m. tip-off from the Cajun Dome. What do you know about the Panthers and what to expect from the team on the other side tonight?
Well, I know it's probably going to be a high-scoring game. You know, Dan and I are off tonight, and I appreciate you mentioning that. I've enjoyed that. Doing that so much, and it kind of happened by chance. You know, I ran into Dan McDonald, and he was getting some things ready and doing some of the football side of it and getting ready for basketball. And I said, "Well, man, who are you doing it with?" And he said, I don't have anybody yet. So I gave him my number, and he called me, and we visited about it. And it's only the home games that we do the plus. A lot of the other schools are doing the plus for their home games. So we just do the home games. We were able to work out the schedule, and, man, it has been a blast. I appreciate the Hall of Famer Dan McDonald and Kevin Williams, all those guys at UL, allowing me to do that. But tonight, I got my black on. You know, I'm not working the game tonight because they're sending guys from ESPN2. So I got my black on. I'm going to take my beautiful bride for a bite to eat, and then we're going to head over to the Cajun Dome. But I expect it to be high scoring. I expect it to be a lot of threes. Fired up tonight, and the team that gets it done on the defensive end and defensive glass is going to come out with a big conference win.
Coach, decent chance that we've got the national anthem here while you're answering this question, so Clinton may have to see you out so I don't talk over it. But one more for you. Yeah. I know that you've got a Mardi Gras camp coming up. I'd love for you to tell our listeners all about it.
Yeah, March 6th through 9th, the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of Mardi Gras, grades pre-K through 8th grade, and we get in there and kids are out of school and we put them through the drills. We put them through different competitions to help them get better. And, we'll play a little three-on-three and five-on-five to help those kids get better. But you can go to ascensionbluegators.org, click on camps and classes, and you can find the registration right there online. Take care of all that. We'd love to have as many kids there as possible to get some great basketball in over those 3 days.
Well, look at us. We got it in under the gun. All that work you've been doing with Dan's paying off, brother. We fit it in, man, and we got a lot into this conversation, didn't we?
Awesome. Absolutely, Ben. I appreciate you having me on, and always available. Happy to talk local hoops or Raging Cajun hoops with you.
Coach, we appreciate you. Best of luck to the Blue Gators. Talk soon.
All right, Ben. Go Blue Gators. Go Cajuns.
That's Eric Mouton, and he's right. His picture's on the wall several times in several different formats here. With the tie on as an assistant, and then with the uni on next to a couple of really, really talented players from St. Thomas More High School. All right, we are going to take a break. When we return, open phone line, 706-0111. The NBA says AD must play, or they're going to dent Gail Benson's wallet. There's a lot of that going on in New Orleans recently. We can keep discussing that. LSU basketball, UL basketball, and more when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out on the south side of Lafayette on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Revving up, we're right back in to the Cougar Dome on the campus of St. Thomas More, where right now the home PA announcer introducing the STM Lady Cougars, and it is senior night for these ladies as they're welcoming in the Lady Vikings from Northside. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Going to be a busy, busy stretch for us. Excited about the game tonight. Again, Clint's going to have the best of the week that was, 6:30 until 7 o'clock. Then our pregame show will begin. We're planning to run an interview in that period of time with Chance LeMaire, somebody who spent an awful lot of time here on campus at St. Thomas More, and these days is the lead scout for Prep Hoops Louisiana. So some of his best and brightest picks to click from around the area. And then just who Will Wade and LSU will be going after as far as recruiting goes in the late signing periods. All that still coming your way. And the man standing to my left who's about to coach a game, Steven Stroney, for the STM Lady Cougars, should be with me running some color for the boys' varsity games. We're excited about our lineup tonight. I'll get back to LSU hoops while we've got a moment. And we started the show talking a little bit of fast-paced basketball. Not a lot of defense. It's an area where the Cajuns are definitely going to have to step up tonight against Georgia State and moving forward. LSU is going to have to pay some attention on that side as well. It can't be just through, you know, whatever, three, maybe four. The other night it was five steals a game for Tremont Waters. It can't be just Cavell Bigby Williams gobbling up defensive boards and then blocking two or three shots a game. There's going to have to be more consistent perimeter defense. And against Auburn tomorrow, 1 p.m. tip inside the PMAC, they might get a nice boost from the crowd. According to Jacques Doucet, WAFB-TV in the capital city, as of about 3:30 p.m., LSU had less than 1,000 tickets left to be sold to the game inside the PMAC. So it's going to be a packed house. Football's completely over. Baseball hasn't yet started. And you've got a team that's 8-1 in conference play. They've won five straight on the road in the SEC, and three of them have been in overtime. And so, yeah, you better believe it. The crowd's going to be amped tomorrow. Offensively, LSU's only issue is they go in runs. They go in spurts. They haven't been as consistent as you'd like. But defensively, I think that's the place they're really going to have to pick it up if they want to get to 9-1, entering what would then be a top 20 matchup between LSU and Kentucky from Rupp Arena on Tuesday. And so next week has a chance to be a lot of fun and really special for LSU basketball. But you got to win this one first. And I'll take you back to what Brian Snow told us, college basketball recruiting analyst for 247 Sports. He joins us Mondays, and he said, look, I see the three-game stretch that LSU's got in front of them. I think realistically they win one game is what he told us, or that they have to have a floor of just one win. If they can get to two, it's been successful. Three is probably impossible, pie in the sky. Well, one up, one down so far. And so now the goal has to become for LSU, can you protect home court? Last time they played in the PMAC, lost a nail bite at Arkansas. So the ability to get back off the mat and then preferably for Wade and every fan in Louisiana's health and mental sanity, maintain the same level of play that you do in the final 10 minutes for the first 30 minutes. That's been part of the missing component. And I'll repeat something from yesterday. It's a bit lazy to come with the take that LSU starts slow. It's a bit lazy. In the game at Humphrey Coliseum in Mississippi State, they were up 16-8. Of course, the problem there is then they let the Bulldogs rattle off 17 unanswered. So it's a team that just has extended runs. Part of that is being young, but as I've told you for the last few weeks, there is no such thing as being young, at least as an excuse at the college level. All the best teams, exceptions of some of your group of five type of programs, right? You could point to Nevada, and Eric Musselman recruits a lot of JUCO kids out there, so you get it. Gonzaga, maybe even Virginia, but for the most part, they're anomalies. Everybody in college basketball is young. And LSU's guys have started a lot of games. Naz Reid. And even some of the sophomores like Tremont Waters. These are experienced players at this point, and they're going to be relied upon in that type of way. So LSU, 18-4, 8-1. And they've got a chance to play themselves into one heck of a seed come NCAA tournament time. So don't forget, big day, not just for LSU basketball tomorrow, but for our station in general. We'll have On the Trail. It'll be the season finale this recruiting cycle for Shea and I, 9 a.m. until 10 a.m. And then, Clint, you'll correct me if I'm wrong. Are you guys going to go all the way up until the pregame show at 12:30? So do we get 2.5 hours of the producers to follow?
Yeah, you get an extra half hour of the producers in your life, Ben. It's going to be a big one. We got all kinds of stuff on tap for tomorrow. Don't want to quite give out the plans just yet, but trust me, you want to tune in from 10 to 12:30 tomorrow.
Well, Clint played hooky last week on this show. He skipped out to be literally the voice of Mardi Gras, which is still the most badass thing of all time. So you get 30 more minutes of penance because, well, you missed your first show of the producers probably ever. All right, exactly. We got a break coming up. On the other side, the best of the week, and there's a lot to pick from. Heck of a week when it comes to all the recruiting that's been going down, all the Anthony Davis nonsense that we've been immersed in, plus a wild LSU win at Mississippi State. So a hard chore for the famous Clint D to pick the best that was. I'll be back with you at 7 o'clock pregame show for Northside at St. Thomas More and then tip off at 7:30. And it's all coming at you after Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.